Roads Ministry. Your speaker is Ben Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry. All Roads Ministry is primarily an organization which is designed to educate and motivate the Catholic of today into better understanding, defending, and spreading and explaining his faith. As Father Feeney remains, years after his death, a controversial figure in American Catholicism, this tape is designed to dispel some of the myths and to present you with some of the facts relating to this man, this Catholic, and this priest, and why he became so controversial. We hope that your listening to this tape will be a blessing, and we thank you for obtaining it and listening to it. With that, let us proceed with the tape.
This tape is a conversation between me, Ben Lewis, and the fellow on the other line. I'll let you introduce yourself. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Douglas Burson.
And why am I talking to you, Doug, about Father Feeney?
Well, I'm a Third Order member of the Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And that's the religious order founded by Father Leonard Feeney in 1949 during the height of the Boston controversy. Over the Boston heresy case, what they call the Boston heresy controversy.
Okay, do you think it would be fair to say, Doug, that despite the fact that Father Feeney's been dead since, when is it again, 1970?
Father Feeney died on January 30th, 1978.
It's been roughly then 15 years, and Father Feeney is still probably the most controversial contemporary figure in American Catholicism. Would you say that's a correct statement?
I would say that's pretty close to the mark.
And, of course, that's why we're talking today in this telephone conversation. We're going to try to clear up some of the misconceptions about Father Feeney and convey some of the truths about him. So, essentially, this conversation will be in the form of an interview in which I'll ask Doug certain questions and he will provide the answers. Simply for those who are listening, they should not interpret any of my questions as being in any way antagonistic. I will play at times devil's advocate simply to try to induce things from Doug which I believe the person listening to this tape might be interested in. But I'll go on record now simply as saying that all of the evidence I have been able to gather, both pro and con, concerning Father Feeney has led me to believe that Father Feeney was a martyr for the faith, that he was and remained until his death a faithful Catholic, and that, in essence, it was the politically correct thing to slander him while he was both alive and to disparage his memory since he's been dead. I figured I'd simply get that formal statement out of the way first. Doug, would you, again, just so that people will be aware, would you please give the address of St. Benedict Center and the telephone number? I'll ask you to repeat it again at the end of the tape where people could contact for further information, please.
The Crusade of St. Benedict Center is headquartered in Richmond, New Hampshire, and the address is 95 Martin Road, Richmond, New Hampshire, 03470. Our phone number here is 603-239-6485.
And it would be fair to say, Doug, that any of the information we cover today or any further information could be obtained by contacting your organization, correct?
That's correct.
So, in other words, if we leave anything out or if people want further documentation or if they wish to pursue the matter or we hope even, shall we say, join up in your crusade, that they would they could take the first step by contacting.
We have many books, publications, cassette tapes available discussing all aspects of the history of the crusade, the founding of the order, the doctrinal fight for which we are known as a crusade.
Okay, very good. Let's start with a brief biographical sketch of Father Leonard Feeney, if we can, please.
Father Feeney was, by all accounts, a very charismatic man. He was born into an Irish Catholic family in Lynn, Massachusetts in 1897. And so, therefore, he was just a few days short of his 81st birthday when he died. He grew up and had a vocation to the priesthood. Two of his brothers were Catholic priests as well, Father Tom and Father John. Father Leonard chose, as did his brother Father Tom, to become a Jesuit. They both had the high ideals of the order founded by St. Ignatius, and Father Feeney was trained in the Jesuit colleges, and as a young priest was one of their star performers, if you would. He was a very well-known writer, a poet, an essayist, He edited America magazine for the Jesuits for many years. He was the fill-in on Father Bishop Fulton Sheen's radio program, the Catholic Hour, during the war years. And he was called by his provincial, the head of the Jesuits, as America's foremost theologian, without question. He was often styled America's Chesterton by those who loved his poetry and his essay writing. So he was a very famous, well-known priest. While he was in New York editing the Jesuit magazine, his primary concern always was for the salvation of souls. And although he traveled in very, fashionable and intellectual circles for a number of years, his real love was for the average man who he desired them to know the fullness of the faith and to become Catholic and save their soul. So one of the most interesting highlights was the special apostle he had to the New York taxi drivers. All those years in New York, he got tired of all the hobnobbing with the intellectuals, and he would go out and ride the cabs around town and convert the taxi drivers, which he had quite a success with. It wasn't until he was transferred to Weston College, which is a Catholic seminary just outside of the city of Boston. And while he was there, he became associated with St. Benedict Center, that the character of his apostolate began to change somewhat and come into conflict with the powers that be, both within the hierarchy of the church and in the world about him.
Okay, allow me to jump in here. What you've described to me is an above-average priest doing an above-average job, and for that reason, he was, shall we say, officially approved, promoted, going through the normal channels of approval in the church in America. Is that the correct way to describe it?
Very much. He was highly lauded by all his superiors and all who knew him, especially as a preacher.
Fine. Now, one point I'd like to make at this time, Doug. When Father Feeney was being approved of by the hierarchy, by his superiors, etc., was he at this point teaching anything different, not differently? Was he teaching anything substantively different than he taught later?
No, only the emphasis on certain doctrines was not quite as strong as it was later on.
Okay, so but the point I'm trying to make is, and you're confirming this, that when Father Feeney was officially approved of by his superiors, he did not have a different set of doctrines than he had later when he fell under disapproval. Is that a correct statement?
Okay. Yeah, no difference in the doctrine.
Very good. Okay, so but again, we have this situation where Father Feeney is simply, shall we say, being used properly by the church. He goes to Weston College outside of Boston. What year are we talking about here, Doug?
I'm not exactly certain the year he was transferred to Weston, but sometime during his stay at Weston, he was introduced to Catherine Goddard Clark, who was at that time had been running for over 2 years. A small Catholic school near the premises of Harvard College called St. Benedict Center. And very soon after that, he was transferred full-time to be their priest and a spiritual advisor.
All right, we're talking about this is during World War II, roughly?
1942.
Oh, so he became associated with St. Benedict Center in 1942, correct?
That's correct.
All right. And he did not found St. Benedict Center, but he became associated with it as its spiritual director and as an instructor. Is that correct?
Yes. The St. Benedict Center was founded by a Catholic laywoman, Catherine Goddard Clark, and two young converts of hers, Christopher Huntington and Avery Dulles, both of whom are now Catholic priests. They were both converts to the faith, and the three of them founded this school near Harvard University. And they founded it under the authority and with the express permission of the Archbishop of Boston, who was at that time Cardinal William O'Connell. It was founded at the Feast of St. Joseph in 1940. And the method of its founding and the circumstances surrounding it are very interesting. Catholics were forbidden by the bishop to attend the secular universities in that neighborhood. They were supposed to be MIT, Harvard, Radcliffe, and so on. Because the Archbishop felt that any young Catholic boy or girl would, coming under the influence of these atheistic and communist professors at these universities, would be likely to lose their faith. However, many prominent Catholic families people who were more interested in the worldly advancement of their children than their salvation sent their children to these colleges nonetheless. And Sister Catherine didn't want to just abandon them to these atheistic institutions. So she conceived the idea of forming a school physically near these colleges so the Catholic students attending these colleges would have a place of refuge to come to get good, sound Catholic doctrine.
So, in other words, it was sort of a layman's seminary? Is that how you would that be a proper description of it?
Not a seminary, but it was a layman's school organized by laymen under the permission and authority of the Cardinal of Boston.
So what we have is an officially approved learning institution,
right,
in which Cardinal, approved of by the Cardinal at the time, for the purposes, as you say, an antidote to the secularism that was rampant in Boston at the time, correct?
That's correct.
And Father Feeney, officially and with approval of the Church, obviously, and his superiors, was allowed to be associated with this, correct?
And both the Cardinal of Boston and the Jesuit superior gave Father permission and the orders to become associated with St. Benedict Center.
So once again, although we might have an exceptional situation because of Father Feeney's particular talents or because of his assignments, we really have nothing that would make him stand out in any controversial way yet. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, let us lead up to the situation that started the controversy.
Well, the controversy erupted in 1949. So for those 7 years, from 1942 to 1949, we have several world events in the background that should be, spoken of to lay the background. First of all, of course, the war was going on. And secondly, we had the bombing of Hiroshima, we had the upheaval of communism after the war, and we had the message of Fatima coming into prominence in this country. Now, this school began to grow and prosper under three teachers, Sister Catherine, Father Leonard, and Dr. Fakhri Maalouf, who were the sort of guiding minds of the St. Benedict Center. And it was so successful in what they intended to do that not only were young Catholics from Harvard and Redmond being salvaged, so to speak, but they were making many, many converts. They made so many converts, as a matter of fact, that the people in the power of authority of Harvard and Radcliffe and so on, the secular world about them, began to get alarmed. One of the leaders of the president of Harvard College said, if Father Feeney isn't stopped, within 3 years Harvard will be a Catholic college. The manner in which they presented the faith, the depth in which they studied it, and the excitement of the faith that Father and these two other teachers brought young people was contagious. And when the young American soldiers came back from the war in droves, they began to enter St. Benedict Center at the college level. St. Benedict Center then was then accredited under the GI Bill to grant college degrees. And so not only were there many, many conversions, but St. Benedict Center sent over 100 vocations to religious orders during those years. And during this period of time, they were studying the faith according to the fathers and doctors of the Church and teaching it the way it was taught throughout the centuries. And they began to discover that this was not exactly the fashion in which certain members of the Catholic hierarchy were interested in preaching the faith now. They had a different conception of how the faith should be taught, and in fact we know from our studies that the modernists, who are a form of heretic within the Church, were already infiltrating the Church and attempting to water down the doctrines. And one doctrine in particular seemed to rise their wrath more than anything, and that was the doctrine, outside the Church there is no salvation. So when Father Feeney finally came to the conclusion, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, that this doctrine, the denial of this doctrine, was at the root of the weakness of faith and the lack of apostolicity among the hierarchy in this country, they began to preach the necessity of this doctrine with a little greater emphasis than they had in the past.
This is what you referred to before as a change in emphasis, correct?
That's right.
So, and this is probably the reason, in your mind, why Father Feeney has become inextricably associated with this particular doctrine?
Yes, no question about it.
Again, not that Catholics can reject this doctrine, or not that Father Feeney disregarded or downplayed any other doctrine. It simply was, again, correct me if I'm paraphrasing you correctly, that he saw a need, because this had been downplayed, to sort of bring it to its proper position. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so again, we're dealing with not an invention of Father Feeney, simply what he feels is the proper antidote, or the first step in the proper antidote, to the secularism and the modernism that was infecting the church at the time. Correct?
That's right.
All right. Now, but once again, what we still have is a Catholic priest teaching Catholic doctrines in a Catholic institution and converting Protestants to Catholics. Quite frankly, anybody listening to this tape, or any normal Catholic, should not understand why that should put Father Feeney on the official bad guy list. After all, he seems to be only doing his job. What led up to the change? Again, we're still talking about him being in an officially approved church institution. So why did Father Feeney, why did he ever get on this road which led to his, his being put into the doghouse?
Well, whenever the kingdom of Satan is under attack, he marshals his forces and tries to destroy the attack that's coming upon his kingdom. Now, when souls are being converted to the true faith and vocations to the priesthood are coming in large numbers, certain people get upset. Obviously, the people whose interest was to convert this nation to a secular communist state were the first who rose up in anger against what Father Feeney was doing. But they had many allies in the positions of authority within the Catholic Church. And they had these allies for several reasons. One, because many of these secularists were supporting financially the Catholic Church, as long as the church was not too apostolic. Secondly, many of the Catholic bishops and priests in the area were very weak in the faith themselves and felt that the strong, clear teaching of the faith, the way it was emanating from St. Benedict Center, was a little too harsh and therefore wanted to tone it down somewhat. It's not considered gentlemanly to teach the faith clearly and without compromise the way it was being taught at St. Benedict Center. So there was a meeting between the bishop in Boston and some important people at the Adams House in Harvard University, and it was decided that Father Feeney had to go. And how this arrangement was made manifest through the offices of the cardinal in Boston and the Jesuit Teaching University at Boston College is the story behind the suppression of Father Feeney and thereby the doctrine.
What you've described, Doug, is the motivation. How did the mechanism come about?
The mechanism came about, there were four professors in Boston College. Now, Boston College is a Jesuit-run college in the city of Boston, Catholic college. Many of the students who were originally at Harvard or Radcliffe and came under the influence of St. Benedict Center transferred to local Catholic colleges in the area because once they began to realize the importance of their faith, they wanted to study it in an atmosphere conducive to the faith and not in Harvard University any longer. So they transferred to these other Catholic colleges, and then they discovered that what they were being taught there was not that much different from what they were being taught at secular universities. And so conflicts were arising between students and professors, and also between professors and the university staff itself. Now, finally, four people who were professors at Boston College and also students or teachers at St. Benedict Center were fired from Boston College for teaching the doctrine there's no salvation outside the church. And that's what ignited the controversy.
Okay, we have the firing of four individuals. Obviously, Father Feeney is not one of these four individuals.
Right.
Why did Father Feeney's name, or why did the Father Feeney affair begin with the firing of these four individuals?
Well, Father Feeney's job, given to him by his Jesuit superiors, was to be the spiritual people his children, and he, as their spiritual father, was called to their defense. Even if their defense, that defense had to be made against other churchmen, it was being defended by Father Feeney on an issue of Catholic doctrine which cannot be denied by any Catholic.
So Father Feeney got involved as he interceded, shall we say, on behalf of these people because he felt that an act of injustice had been committed against them. Is that correct?
Correct.
You would certainly say then at this point that Father Feeney did not go out spoiling for a fight or looking for one, or he did not provoke a disagreement with his superiors. Is that correct?
No, in no way did he do that.
And also, he saw this as an act of injustice. He didn't, shall we say, go around shouting from the rooftops that his superiors were preaching heresy. He did not bring an open scandal in the church to the public, did he?
Not immediately.
But at this point...
At this point, he did not.
Okay, so what we're talking about is, again, what he sees as an act of injustice, which he, as in a certain sense a shepherd to a flock, needs to do something about. Is that a correct paraphrase?
That's correct.
Okay, so Father Feeney sees these people get fired, he gets involved. Was this the opportunity that the establishment had been looking for to get Father Feeney?
Yes. Father Feeney then went through the normal channels for grievances and complaints within the Jesuit order, and there were conversations between the professors and Father Leonard and the Jesuit superiors at the college. And when they discovered that the real reason the professors were fired was for teaching this doctrine, he made a complaint to the Jesuit superior, the provincial in the United States, saying that this professor of this college has fired these four professors for teaching Catholic doctrine, and in fact are allowing other professors at the college to teach things which are contrary to Catholic doctrine. And you, as the leader of this society, are responsible for this, so therefore you must act. He refused to do so.
He being the head of the
Order of the Jesuit Order.
Correct.
So then, Father Feeney went to the next hierarchical step, which would be to go to the Cardinal Archbishop of Boston, who at this time was Cardinal Cushing, and who, up to this time, had been a very good friend of St. Benedict Center, had spoke many times at the center, and had even contributed articles to our publication from the housetops. So thinking that he might back us in this, He went to the Cardinal, and the Cardinal refused to do anything. In fact, he said that you have to stop preaching that doctrine. And he said, well, of course, we can't stop preaching that doctrine. I was ordained to the Catholic priesthood in order to teach these doctrines. And you were consecrated bishop of this diocese in order to protect Catholic doctrines. And therefore, this is not a simple request that I'm making. This is a demand upon your conscience. As a Catholic bishop, you are required by your position to defend this doctrine and to defend these people who are teaching that doctrine.
These procedures that Father Feeney went through, these were, again, to use the common cliche, these were going through channels, is that correct?
Going through normal canonical channels, that's correct.
So once again, he was simply following, doing what a priest in his situation should do, correct?
That's right.
All right. Now we have the situation where... Cardinal Cushing has made, shall we say, a rather strong suggestion to Father Feeney, and Father Feeney has not responded to it. Would that be a correct way to put it?
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
And the result was that Cardinal Cushing placed an interdict on St. Benedict Center.
What are we talking about as far as a year here now?
This is 1949.
Okay.
During Easter, Holy Week of 1949.
And an interdict, for those who are not aware, is what?
Excuse me? An interdict. An interdict is a statement, an official order from the bishop of the diocese for a priest to stop acting as a priest. He was forbidden to say Mass, to hear confessions, to act in any way as a spiritual advisor, and the order was given for St. Benedict Center to close and to know that Catholics should go near it or have anything to do with these people.
And an interdict, of course...
Essentially, it's an ostracism.
Okay. And an interdict, of course, although a cardinal or a bishop may have the power to do so, is not necessarily a binding decision made by a church which is automatically correct.
Well, no, it's not automatically correct. The bishop has the authority to do so, but not always the right to do so.
Very good. I simply wanted to make that clear. So, and this, of course, was designed to put heavy pressure on Father Feeney so that he would come back submissive, say, well, gee whiz, Cardinal, I'll follow your rules, release the interdict. Correct?
That's
Is
correct.
That your impression?
That's correct.
And, of course, what happened? Did Father Feeney respond?
Yes, he did. He responded by saying that it was against his conscience as a Catholic priest to stop preaching the Catholic faith and to give scandal to souls. Now, if Father Feeney had submitted at that point, ceased preaching the Catholic faith, and began to deny it, not only could he have lost his own soul, but it would have been a source of scandal for millions of people who knew exactly what he was teaching, knew that the bishop was against it, and if he had gone along with the bishop's orders and submitted, then it would appear that the doctrine was not truly a Catholic teaching, and Father Feeney could not allow that to happen. So that's why he had to stand firm in his conscience as a Catholic, according to the rules of the Church.
Again, just to reiterate, what you're saying is, his action was justified on two bases. One is the compulsion of conscience, but the second was that the cardinal was wrong and Father Feeney was factually right.
That's correct.
So in other words, on both bases, both subjective and objective, Father Feeney had the obligation of what I would like to phrase righteous disobedience. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right.
Now, a very important thing happened at this juncture. The men who were in the positions of authority in the Church that were interested in suppressing Father Feeney and preventing the teaching of this doctrine realized that they could never prove their case in an open forum against Father Feeney. So they had to do two things. They had to prevent at all costs an open hearing in a court of canon law where Father could defend his position doctrinally, because he knew that he could and would, and that they would lose on that issue. So they had to change the issue from one of doctrine to one of obedience. And that's what they tried to do. And the way they did this was they had the Jesuit superior order Father Feeney to leave St. Benedict Center and go immediately to Holy Cross College, Worcester, which is another Catholic college in the neighborhood.
Okay.
Essentially be under house arrest and to be quiet and just give up the whole thing.
Okay, I believe we haven't covered one thing which you brought up.
Yep.
When the interdict was placed on St. Benedict Center, did it in fact have an effect?
Oh, yes, it did have an effect.
Did Father Feeney cease functioning as a priest?
No, he did not.
Okay, again, because of the obeying his conscience.
That's right.
Did people leave the St. Benedict Center?
A large number did.
Because they felt they were obligated to obey the interdict, correct?
That's correct.
So one of the desired effects did in fact occur, which was a weakening of the St. Benedict Center.
Yes.
And it also, to the world, or to the secular press, or even to some confused Catholics, might give the impression that the St. Benedict Center was in fact a heretical, rebellious group, correct?
That's correct.
And of course, this is exactly what was intended.
That's what was intended.
Okay. Now we have a situation that Father Feeney has been reassigned through the normal channels of the Jesuit order, correct?
It was not normal channels. That was how Father Feeney saw that he could not obey that order.
Okay, so he does receive an order from a superior in the Jesuit order to go...
An order from his superior, but it was an uncanonical and unjust order. Not only was it incorrectly done according to normal administrative details, but also it was done for the purpose of suppressing Father Feeney's teaching of the doctrine and destroying the work done at St. Benedict Center. So he disobeyed that unjust order on two counts.
Okay, so once again we have a situation where an attempt is made, since I assume at this time most people associate Father Feeney and St. Benedict sort of as one big noun dealing with the same institution, that if Father Feeney can be discredited or removed, that the heart would go out of the St. Benedict Center. Was this not the motivation?
That's exactly the motivation.
And at that time, Father Feeney was in fact the heart of the St. Benedict Center, was he not?
Yes.
Okay.
And since his original order was to go and be their spiritual director, and since the original commission given to St. Benedict Center by Cardinal William O'Connell, now dead, was to teach the faith without compromise, in order to remain true to those orders and that commitment to Cardinal O'Connell, he found that he had to refuse that unjust order.
So Father Feeney's basis of refusal was, number one, that it was against normal Jesuit policy, correct?
Correct.
Number two, that it would be in violation of his conscience and his obligation. And number three, that it would be actually in violation of his original mandate given him to by the first cardinal, correct?
That's correct.
So in other words, this simply wasn't a fit of pique or anger or, shall we say, didn't get his Irish up. It was a reasonable, reasoned objection to once again an act of injustice. Would that be a proper way to phrase it?
Taken with much advice and counsel, not only from his supporters at St. Benedict Center, with many hours of prayer, but also with consultation with canon lawyers, men who are versed in these affairs in the church law.
All right. If Father Feeney disobeys, does he try to appeal the decision?
Yes, he did. The very next thing he did was appeal to Rome. And what he did was he sent a letter of conscience to the Holy Father, basically requesting two things. A hearing of his case for the unreasonable interdict and orders that were placed upon him, but also a charge of heresy against the Jesuit superior in the United States, against the head of the Jesuit institution, Boston College, and against Cardinal Cushing. And this charge was these three men are not only allowing heresy to be taught Boston College, but are actually persecuting those Catholics who are trying to defend the Catholic faith in their diocese. And so therefore, these men should be, there should be a hearing, and these men should, if they're found guilty of heresy, they should be removed from their office. So there was a twofold request.
Once again, this is a normal going through the channels type procedure, correct?
That's right.
And once again, Father Feeney was not asking for a, shall we say, in normal use of the word, a plea bargain. He was requesting an open hearing based on the facts, correct?
Correct.
So in other words, he wanted things at this point brought into the open so that he could exonerate himself and establish the reasons why he had in conscience disobeyed apparently valid orders from superiors, correct?
That's right.
All right. Did he ever receive such a hearing?
He never received such a hearing.
So the fact is that Father Feeney was never, quote-unquote, tried by any church tribunal on his procedure, his doctrines, or any of the other things that are associated with his name, correct?
No, neither the Cardinal nor Father Feeney was tried on an issue of heresy. But it was Father Feeney who accused the bishop of heresy, not the other way around. Father Feeney was never publicly accused of anything except disobeying the orders of the Holy Cross.
So when people might say, well, you know, the church listened to Father Feeney and found him guilty, they are, to be very charitable, exaggerating something that didn't exist into a reality. Is that a proper way to put it?
That's correct. And there never was any hearing.
And one of the big misconceptions dealing with Father Feeney, which I hope we're clearing up, is that somehow he was formally condemned by the church, that he had opportunities to present this in formal, open hearings, that he was tried in some way, in some fashion, and found guilty by some papal tribunal. In fact, none of these things occurred, correct?
None of them.
And in fact, again, simply to emphasize the point, it was Father Feeney who was seeking, in fact, such a tribunal, such a decision, such a trial, correct?
That's correct.
And the reason was, of course, as you would say, the reason he wanted this open hearing?
Was because he wanted to prove that he was right.
And, of course, there was no doubt in your mind, or as you could understand his mind, that in fact he could have done so.
Oh, of course. Okay. That was the fear of the cardinal.
Okay. So, again, the only conclusion we can come up to is that a fair and open hearing would have exonerated Father Feeney, so therefore his enemies could not allow this, correct?
Right.
All right. We now have a situation where Father Feeney has made these requests. They have not been granted. We're in essentially a state of interdict limbo with St. Benedict's, and Father Feeney has not gone off to his new assignment. Again, most of these things happened in the year 1949, correct?
1949. And the other important thing that happened in 1949 was, under the pressure of this situation, everyone that remained at St. Benedict's Center in violation of the interdict in defense of the faith felt that they needed a deeper spiritual commitment in order to fight this battle. And so they took religious vows, and they formed a religious order called the Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And there were about 100 original members at the time of the founding of the order.
And that is the order of which you are a member also, correct?
That's correct.
Just an interesting aside, it's quite unfashionable in America to use the word slave in any way whatsoever, and certainly to make oneself a voluntary slave is about as un-American as you can get. I simply point this out because one of the things Doug has not brought up, which I think is important, perhaps you could comment on it briefly, Doug, is at this time we're talking about Boston. To refresh the listener's memory, this is the time of the rise of the Kennedys, and the Kennedys were being groomed to be presidents. They would have been the first, at least nominally, Catholic presidents of the United States. And if Father Feeney, on their so-called home ground, was now preaching that there was no salvation outside the church and converting Protestants and threatening the foundations of Harvard, this could be a terrible political burden to an alleged Catholic trying to run into the deep South. So therefore, I'm saying that outside of the church politics that was going on, there was a secular political situation. And we all do remember, or those of us who are old enough to remember, that Cardinal Cushing did in fact stand on the inaugural platform when John F. Kennedy was sworn in.
Not only that, but he said his funeral mass.
Right, as the first officially non-Catholic president of the United States, as I see it. All the others have been Protestants, and John F. Kennedy was a non-Catholic. But the point is, I'm trying to make, and I'm simply asking for your opinion on this, Doug, is that this was another factor which made Father Feeney's case so distasteful to the Catholic hierarchy. Would you agree with that?
Yes. There was quite a lot of involvement between the Kennedy family and St. Benedict Center on many levels. We have heard from friends of the family that the Father Feeney issue was argued vehemently many, many times around the kitchen table at Rose Kennedy's house, and that some members of the family on one side of the issue and some on the other, and it was some of the most violent arguments in that household ever took place on that issue. Jack Kennedy himself had been to St. Benedict Center and heard Father preach many times. Young Robert Kennedy was thrown out of the center by Father Leonard Feeney on one particular occasion, being because he was so arrogant and disrespectful of the Catholic priesthood. Father Feeney asked him to leave and not come back to the center. Also, we know the wealth of the Kennedys and the fact that they were heavy financial supporters of the Archdiocese in Boston, and the close personal relationship between Archbishop Cushing and the Kennedy family. All of these things were interesting sidelines on the issue.
But again, what we have is a situation where every force that is a force in the Boston area has a reason to be against Father Feeney, and quite frankly, only individuals in good conscience, but not in any organized fashion other than being in the St. Benedict Center or this order, have a reason to be on his side. Would that be a correct way to phrase it?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
In other words, the establishment was against them, although people might have been in his favor.
That's correct.
Okay.
However, many of those individuals who were, in their heart, favorable to Father Feeney, often were cowed by the violence with which he was attacked by the secular press and by the Catholic press and by the Catholic hierarchy. And so oftentimes public pressure can keep a man quiet when his heart would really want him to speak. And there was many, many testimonies of friends who were sort of quiet friends, like Nicodemus's and Joseph of Arimathea's. Throughout the Catholic hierarchy, the Catholic schools, and the Catholic religious orders, and even families were divided on the issue at the time. So we had many friends, some of them public, some of them not so public.
Okay, let's go back to the sequence if we can, where Father Feeney has now disobeyed his order to go to a different location. He has filed the appeals, which are not going to be granted. What happens chronologically at this point, Doug?
The major incident was the publication of a protocol letter from Cardinal Marchetti Salvagiani.
Before you go further, please tell the listener what a protocol letter is.
A protocol is a diplomatic term, and protocol is a matter of behavior or official response. And it was issued from one cardinal who was, at that time, under Cardinal Attaviani, a member of the Holy Office in Rome. It was a letter issued to the Cardinal Archbishop of Boston, essentially outlining to him how this other cardinal in Rome felt that the issue concerning the doctrine of St. Benedict Center and the doctrine of extrinsic solace should be handled in this particular circumstance.
Hold two things, Doug. One is, for those who are not familiar with Latin, the Latin phrase that Doug used is the formal way, or the technical way, of saying no salvation outside the church. Secondly, Doug, would you tell the listener what the Holy Office was?
The Holy Office is that office in the church which is the derivative from what used to be called the Inquisition. It's the office which is charged with safeguarding the integrity of the deposit of faith handed down to us from our Lord and the Apostles.
Okay. Now, what you're saying is, correct me if I've got you wrong, that this cardinal, who was a member of that, sent a letter to another cardinal. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we're talking about a letter, not an official pronouncement, not an infallible decree, not a papal decision. We're talking about an official diplomatic-type letter sent from one cardinal to another on this particular subject. Correct?
That's correct.
Is this letter in any way binding as far as faith and morals goes upon Catholics?
No, it is absolutely not binding.
It is an official document, but it doesn't have the binding status of official pronouncement that, say, an encyclical would. Not to say that all encyclicals are binding, but this is much less below the status of an encyclical, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's not an encyclical at all.
Okay, with that, hold 1 minute, Doug, and let me flip the tape. Okay, Doug, now you've mentioned this letter. Would you please tell us briefly what the letter said, or whatever you can, if you feel a quote from it is appropriate to say.
It was a classic example of what we call dialectic liberal double talk. The first section, the substantial portion of the letter, pronounced the doctrine, told very clearly that we are bound to believe all those things taught by the church, and that we have to be Catholic in order to be saved. However, at the very end of it, under section 12, it said that a man may obtain salvation even if he is not officially a Catholic, but if he could be united to the church by longing and desire, and that this desire need not always be explicit, but when a person is involved in invincible ignorance, God accepts an implicit desire to belong to the church. Now, it was this section of the letter which gave scandal and which Father Fini denounced as heretical. And so therefore, he said that no Catholic could agree to that section of that letter, and therefore he was not bound by it, nor was any Catholic bound in conscience by it.
So what we have here, again, I'll speculate. You tell me if the speculation is reasonable. What we have is a letter issued by a cardinal in a high-ranking official position, which, when it is leaked to the press, would give the distinct impression that the church had come down condemning Father Fini's positions. And this, of course, would be spread around. It would, again, discredit him through the secular press. But a more technical and precise examination of the nature of the letter would in fact reduce it to merely, at best, private theological speculation.
That's exactly correct. It was never even published in the Acta Apostolici Sedis, which is the official documents of the Church. So in that sense, it doesn't even bear the stamp of an official document of the Church.
Now, is this the only statement that people use to point out, quote, that Father Fini's views were condemned by the Church, unquote?
Yes, that's the only thing they can point to.
So now when people say, well, gee whiz, the Pope issued a decree on this, or the Vatican issued a formal pronouncement, or something to that effect, which you probably hear as often as I do.
Yes.
It's either this they're referring to, or they're totally fabricating something, or being totally misled, correct?
Exactly.
And in fact, this thing was as you described, and could only, by the most gross misapplication of ignorance, be understood as any kind of official pronouncement on Father Fini's position, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. One of the other things that the alleged legend of Father Fini has is that sometime later, because of his repeated teaching of heresy, he was in fact excommunicated. Can you fill us in? Oh, by the way, when was the date of this protocol letter?
The Marchetti Salvagiani letter was issued in 19, 1949. Let me give you the date. It was published in August 8th, 1949.
So once again, we're dealing with almost everything occurring within the space of 1 year.
Yes. Later on, several months later in October, Father Feeney was dismissed from the Society of Jesuits for teaching the same doctrine.
Okay, now we have Father Feeney still, we assume, physically at the St. Benedict Center. Would that be a correct way to describe it?
Yes.
Out of the Jesuit order. What were the reason was that Father Feeney had been preaching the wrong thing and disobedient, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Now, we have, as I say, this legend that Father Feeney was excommunicated. Could you fill us in on whatever basis there is for that statement?
Well, in a sense, you could say it was true. He was excommunicated. And then, in another sense, you could say, no, he was not. And I'll have to explain that. It could be explained most simply by saying that there was a document issued under the authority of the Holy Office stating that Father Feeney had been excommunicated. However, it was a document which bore no official signature, no official seal. You couldn't say exactly that it was a forged document, but it gave the impression that something had occurred which in fact had not. And the reasons given in that supposed excommunication were for matters of discipline, not for matters of doctrine. So Father Feeney was never accused or excommunicated, even if the excommunication was fraudulent, for matters of doctrinal teaching, but simply because he refused to go to Holy Cross and to abandon teaching the faith.
When did this document first come to light?
1953.
Okay.
So 7 years after the fact.
So in 1953 we have something which purports to be a document of excommunication. Is that correct?
Correct.
How did it become public?
It became public by being published in the Acta Apostolicae Sedis, which is the official publication of Vatican documents, on February 13th, 1953. It was then issued to the press, and then sometime later on, Father Feeney read about it in the newspaper.
In other words, it was never actually delivered to Father Feeney?
Oh, no.
Is it not normal procedure when a person's being excommunicated to give him a right to defend himself against the charges?
Well, that's normal procedure, but nothing was done in the normal fashion with Father Feeney because they were afraid of an open hearing.
So Father Feeney was never notified, by the way, you're in danger of excommunication, come to Rome and explain the situation, was he?
He was told in a fashion that an excommunication was pending, yes. But the fashion in which he was told and the manner in which the whole thing was related to him was specious and completely uncanonical. So it would be somehow, if I were to call you up and send you a letter, say, by the way, Mr. Lewis, next week you're going to be tried for kidnapping in the state of New Hampshire. And you say, well, so? And, well, I think you ought to be here. Well, really? There's no arrest warrant. There's no official papers. I've never even been in the state of New Hampshire. Who's going to try me? Who are you to be calling me anyway? And so you refuse to go. Well, then suddenly something is published in the newspaper saying you were convicted, when in fact there was never any charge, never any document saying you had to be in court, never any chance to, you know, make a hearing or anything. Everything was completely fraudulent and illegal, if you will.
Hold it there 1 minute, Doug, please. So, in fact, if Father Feeney had received such an informal notification, he would have definitely gone because this would have been an opportunity to clear himself, correct?
That's right.
So,
and there were several letters passed between Father Feeney and Cardinal Pizarro in the Holy Office, and after each letter, which Father Leonard Feeney answered, he repeatedly told them that if there was to be a hearing, you know, something official had to be issued. But certainly he wasn't going to go on hearsay from some cardinal that there might be a hearing in Rome concerning his situation. He wanted to know exactly what was going to happen.
Would you say that Father Feeney was simply exercising his rights at this point?
Oh, his right and his duty.
So in other words, he was not trying to avoid his day in court. He was simply trying to assure that he would have a day in court.
Exactly.
And in fact, again, he never did receive any.
No. And an offer to come to Rome for a discussion of his situation not a day in court. He wanted it public and open and on the issue of doctrine.
Once again, we have a situation where excommunications in the church may be automatic, as in the classic case of a person who procures an abortion, etc. Those are automatic type excommunications. However, even the document which we're talking about here was at least on a formal piece of paper, was it not, Doug?
It was on stationery of the Holy Office, and it did bear the signature of a notary public in the city of Rome.
What was the notary notarizing?
He was notarizing, well, I'll read the pertinent paragraph from the doctrine, from the document. Since the priest, Father Leonard Feeney, a resident of Boston, who for a long time has been suspended from his priestly duties on account of grave disobedience of church authority. Notice, disobedience, not doctrine. Being unmoved by repeated warnings and threats of incurring excommunication, has not submitted. The most eminent and reverend fathers, charged with safeguarding matters of faith and morals, in a plenary session held on Wednesday the 4th of February, declared him excommunicated with all effects of the law. So, he's stating that they had a meeting in Rome in which they discussed Father Feeney and they excommunicated him for being disobedient.
Once again, Doug, in America, the only reason you have something notarized is as an official witness to a signature, and the notary is saying that he has some reason to believe that the person signing the document is, in fact, who he claims to be.
Right.
But there was, in fact, no signature on this, correct?
No, there was no signature on a document.
Does it make any sense to notarize something that does not have a signature?
No, of course not.
But again, in the secular press, it would say that this was an officially notarized document. Correct?
Yeah. And to someone who was uneducated in these matters, it would appear that this was an official act of the church excommunicating Father Feeney, when in fact it was no such thing.
Documents of excommunication, such as the one that excommunicated Martin Luther, were issued by the Pope, given titles, and promulgated in such a fashion that we know who, what, where, and when.
That's right. Someone in the proper authority has to take responsibility for issuing that document, and no one did.
So in this case, we have a situation where we have a piece of paper, but we do not have, shall we say, the proper history or the proper credentials with it, correct?
That's correct.
And once again, to the secular press, or to those who are not paying close attention, it would be obvious that Father Feeney was excommunicated, but if you bothered to take the time to find out precisely what had happened, in fact, he was not.
That's right. And the very reason this document was not given to Father Feeney or not delivered to him officially, but rather issued to the press, was exactly that. It was more in the nature of a press release than an official document. They wanted to be able to give the impression to the world that Father Feeney had been excommunicated for teaching that there is no salvation outside the church. Even though the document states to the contrary, that's the impression they wanted to give. And this letter was published in the press, both Catholic and secular, with the headline, Father Feeney excommunicated for teaching no salvation outside the church. Whereas if you even read the document five paragraphs below, you would see that, in fact, the headline was a lie. But that didn't matter. That was the impression they wanted given to the world in order to suppress the teaching of this doctrine and in order to blacken the name of Father Feeney, who by this time had become inextricably associated with the teaching of this defined Catholic truth.
And once this gets, this impression is made in the public mind, no matter how often
right.
Father Feeney were to deny it, it would seem as if he's just sort of the mafia chieftain caught with his hand, on the smoking gun and is now just trying to deny it because everybody denies it when they're caught, correct?
That's right.
And of course, this is in fact what did happen.
That's right.
So one of the misconceptions about Father Feeney deals with this alleged excommunication document.
That's right.
And no other document of excommunication was ever issued by anyone, correct?
No, that's correct.
So therefore, when people say that Father Feeney was excommunicated by the church for teaching the doctrine of no salvation outside the church, in fact, this is the only basis that they have to base that on, and of course it is factually incorrect.
That's right.
All right, so that deals with the excommunication case. And that took place in 1953, correct?
Right, that's right.
And once again, from that time until the time Father Feeney died, he was given no chance to, quote, clear himself in any official church proceedings, correct?
No.
All right. Now, we have an awful long time, though, between 1953 and the time Father Feeney died. And it would appear to me that pretty much this closed the case in many people's minds, simply because it's the old case of when Rome speaks, the case is closed. Rome didn't speak, but the press believed that Rome spoke. But there is again, part of the Father Fini legend is that Father Fini recanted his position and was readmitted to the full graces of the Church before he died. I know there's a factual basis on something did occur. I would like you to elaborate, in fact, what did occur for the listener, please.
Father Fini, for 7 years, from 1951 to 1958, every single Sunday went to Boston Common to preach to the multitudes. Sometimes they had as many as 10 or 15,000 people on Boston Common every single Sunday for 7 years while he preached the faith. After that, the order moved to Still River, which is a town about 40 miles west of Boston, and their life became a little more secluded, a little more monastic. Father Fee, in the early 1970s, his health began to deteriorate. He was afflicted with Parkinson's disease, which affects the ability of a person the acuity and the sharpness of their mind is somewhat clouded. There began to grow within the order a little bit of dissension, and certain members of St. Benedict Center were ready to compromise with the hierarchy over the issue of the doctrine. And so therefore, a scheme was arranged in conjunction with the Bishop of Worcester, who was then Bishop Flanagan, the Cardinal for the Clergy, who was Cardinal Wright in Rome, the Archbishop of Boston, Cardinal Medeiros, and a few other people in the hierarchy, in order to get Father Fini into a position where he would seem to compromise what he had been teaching for all these years and take advantage of the weakness of his final moments on this earth. What happened was a couple of priests and a bishop in normal clerical garb, but not, he was not told to Father Fini that he was a bishop or anything, came to St. Benedict Center one evening, and some of the brothers who were involved in this agreement had written on the board, in Greek, I believe, the Athanasian Creed, which is one of the three official creeds of the Catholic Church.
Good. Continue, please.
So it was suggested that everyone recite the Athanasian Creed, which Father did enthusiastically, because of the three creeds, it's the one which states the doctrine of no salvation outside the Church most clearly and most definitively. As a matter of fact, the opening lines begin, "Whomsoever wishes to be saved, before all things it is necessary that he hold the Catholic faith, which faith, except everyone, do keep whole and undefiled without doubt, he shall perish everlastingly." So, of course, Father Fini was very much in favor of reciting that creed, and he did. Thereafter, the priest and the bishop left, and soon word came back to Father Fini that he had been reconciled to the Church. And so, therefore, he issued a public statement saying that certain members of the center had been negotiating behind his back with members of the hierarchy in an attempt to give the indication to the world that he had recanted in some fashion. And he published a public letter, which he sent to the bishops and all concerned parties, stating that although he was more than willing to recite the Athanasian Creed and recite it till the day he died, it in no way implied that he had recanted or gone back on anything he had ever taught. However, the hierarchy was so anxious to give the impression to the world that Father Fini had been reconciled, as if he had been outside or something before, and that he had recanted, they were very upset by the publication of his letter, and therefore held off for 2 or 3 more years before they issued an official statement from the Church saying that Father Fini had been reconciled. However, it's very clear to note, once again, as in everything with Father Fini, the procedure for the reconciliation of an excommunicated heretic is very clear and precise in canon law. They have to publicly state that what they taught before was erroneous, and recanted and begged admission back into the church, promising never to teach that doctrine again. And, of course, Father Feeney never did any such thing. He said, in fact, that he still holds that doctrine, he still preaches it, and he still maintains, as he always did, that that is the defined doctrine of the church, which every Catholic must believe. And yet, nonetheless, they issued the paper saying that he had been reconciled to the church, that the basis upon which he was reconciled was his public recitation of the Athanasian Creed, which states the doctrine itself right in it. And it was very significant that in the wording of the letter that was published supposedly reconciling Father Feeney, that they said that if there were any official censures on Father Feeney, they are hereby removed. They had to place that if in there because they knew very well that there were no legally justifiable official censures. Yet they just wanted another thing to issue to the press before Father Leonard Feeney died to give the impression that he had recanted and that this dogma is buried.
So if one is to take, shall we say, the official church view and not the factual Father Feeney view, and if one wanted to argue that, yes, Father Feeney was condemned by the Holy Office, yes, he was actually excommunicated by the Church, then logically that person must also say that Father Feeney was admitted back into the Church fully, completely, as a loyal Catholic before his death, correct?
That's correct.
So therefore, even if one takes the official, quote, anti-Father Feeney position, one can never say that Father Feeney died an unrepentant heretic, correct?
Correct.
And by the same token, Father Feeney never retracted anything on doctrinal matters, did he?
That's correct.
So if we actually want to take the official church modernistic view, we have to actually say that this is a case of, since the mountain wouldn't come to Mohammed, Mohammed went to the mountain, and Father Feeney did not change, but the church changed its teachings and somehow accepted Father Feeney's interpretation all the way along because they officially said that he was an officially correct Catholic.
That's right.
So in other words, even if one takes the opposite of the, quote, Feeneyite position, one still is trapped with the position that Father Feeney was officially approved of by the church.
That's right. That's right.
So there is literally no reason, even taking the worst scenario,
right,
to attack Father Feeney's memory as a loyal Catholic priest.
Not whatsoever.
Okay. A couple of things. One was that you said that the hierarchy was anxious to give the impression that Father Feeney had, quote, been reconciled back with the church, unquote. Why were they anxious, Doug?
Well, because there were many members of the hierarchy. And you see, this doctrine is far from dead. No doctrine of the Catholic faith can be buried and be kept out of the minds of men. Truth demands dissent. And the modernists who are within the church and in control of a substantial portion of the hierarchy of this church are people who deny this doctrine. They want at all costs to make it appear that this doctrine is no longer taught officially by the church. And since the protection of the Holy Ghost upon the church would prevent them from doing it officially and legally, they had to devise certain spurious methods and what we call a public smear campaign. Once they had accomplished that, they wanted to make it appear that as Father Feeney left this world, that the doctrine for which he became so publicly known was an archaic thing which the church no longer teaches because we're much more broad-minded than that now. So they were anxious for one last public relations coup with Father Feeney before he died.
So Father Feeney was simply, shall we say, an embarrassment to the modern church because he wouldn't go along, correct?
Exactly.
And this does not mean to say that Father Feeney was the only one, but simply because of the circumstances we've described on this tape, he became the most famous, correct?
Correct.
All right, Doug, I think I've used the word Feeneyite before, and I've been accused of it. I'm sure you're familiar with the term.
Oh, yeah.
Would you give a definition of what you believe a Feeneyite describes?
A loyal Catholic.
So it's simply synonymous for that.
Yes.
I would like to add and tell me if you think this is incorrect. A Feeneyite is also a person who knows that the slander against Father Feeney's name, his reputation, and his legacy is an unjust act, and therefore feels an obligation in charity and in justice
to at least protest against it, if not actively work to try to clear the name and bring truth on this issue. Would you say that is also correct?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, our official position when we deal with the bishops and the hierarchy nowadays is that since they have created this scandal, which has given the impression to the world that the church is no longer teaching an official doctrine of the faith, and they have associated by their actions the name of Father Feeney with this doctrine, they have come to be in some way in the public mind synonymous. Whenever you hear the name Father Feeney, people automatically think, oh, he's the priest that was excommunicated for saying you have to be a Catholic to go to heaven. And so therefore, in order for the church to clear the cloud which has been placed upon this doctrine, they have to also clear the name of Father Feeney, because they are somehow synonymous. And so the easiest way for the church to rectify the situation in which they have sort of shot themselves in the foot, shall we say, is to state, as they did in the case of Joan of Arc, to reopen the case, to give official full hearing to the doctrinal controversy which was raised during the time of Father Feeney's period at St. Benedict Center in the 1940s, to take the cloud off the doctrine and the name of Father Feeney the same way they did with the name of Joan of Arc, who was, by the way, condemned as a heretic and burned at the stake by Catholic authorities. But then later on exonerated, and therefore all her activities and the messages of God that came through her were then given official credence by the church once again.
I'm glad you brought that up, Doug. Joan of Arc is one case, and Savonarola was another, who was either venerable or blessed at this time, who was formally and completely, definitely, officially excommunicated by the Pope of his time, but reconciled before his death, and is now at least in some stage of canonization.
Right.
The point simply I would like to make here is, again, correct me if my impression is incorrect, that excommunication, even if it did take place in a person's life, does not automatically mean that that person is damned, evil, or heretic, because, as in the case of Joan of Arc, and we assume others, the excommunication is a decision made by individuals or a commission, and it is not an infallible decision, correct?
That's correct.
So again, even if the anti-Father Feeney faction wishes to hold that Father Feeney was excommunicated, all they would have is a fact. This would not prove that Father Feeney was wrong, or that his doctrine was wrong, or anything he did was wrong, correct?
That's correct.
So again, I'm simply trying to emphasize certain points, because I'm sure you get the calls, I know I certainly do on this, that even conceding the worst-case scenario to the anti-Father Feeney faction, they still haven't got a leg to stand on to come up with some official disapproval of Father Feeney, correct?
Of course not. And if you study church history, I just off the top of my head, I can think of two doctors of the church, St. Alphonsus Maria de Liguori and St. Athanasius, who were both excommunicated. St. Athanasius four or five times, exiled and excommunicated. And the reason was that in his time, the Arian heretics had gathered the reins of control of many of the church offices into their hands, and therefore were able to use the offices of these church positions in order to persecute those members of the church who were still fighting to defend the integrity of the faith. And it is not an unusual situation in the history of the church. Many times, good Catholic saints have been excommunicated because the person holding the reins of power above them was a heretic.
So, again, let us go back to the chronological sequence. We have this alleged or official or unofficial or press release reconciliation in 1974.
Right.
From that point on till the time of Father Feeney's death, was there anything of a, shall we say, public interest event that would be of interest to someone trying to find out about the Father Feeney case?
Yes. Those members of St. Benedict Center that were involved in what Father called the betrayal of the order and the doctrine divided, even before Father Feeney died, into several different groups. And a large number of the members of the Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary renounced their vows and became Benedictines instead of Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That house still exists in Still River, Massachusetts, and it's called St. Benedict's Priory, to distinguish it from St. Benedict's Center, which is the official order and work of Father Feeney continuing.
It's a good point, Doug. Because of the similarity in names, people might misunderstand. What you're telling us is that the true spiritual descendants of Father Feeney are located in the St. Benedict's Center.
In the St. Benedict's Center in Richmond, New Hampshire.
So right. if people wish to contribute to help even receive products from the proper organization, they should make sure it has that address, correct?
That's correct.
All right.
We have other houses of sisters and brothers in different parts of the country. We have associates in Southern California. We have sisters in Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio. And we have a house of sisters, St. Anne's House, in Still River, Massachusetts, where the original center was located, that are still loyal to the doctrine and teaching the faith as Father always gave it. But Brother Francis, who is Dr. Maloof, one of the four professors fired from Boston College and one of the original founders of the center, is still the superior and still the most loyal and active disciple of Father Feeney. And he is the superior in charge of the crusade, headquartered here in New Hampshire.
So if anybody has any doubts, they should simply contact the correct center to find out if the people they're dealing with are associated with you, correct?
That would be Francis.
Right. Once again, we'll give the address and telephone number at the end. Again, all right, now, again, from that point on till his death in 1978, is and not trying to minimize the man, but simply talking about the Feeney affair, would there have been anything of controversy, interest, or did it essentially become a quiet thing with the misperceptions sort of solidified?
40 years were a time of great sorrow and great... There was a lot of dissension in the order because of what had happened, and Father had a very difficult time, a real martyrdom those last 4 years, worried about what would be the fate of his order and his work after he died. But as is the case with many religious orders, when the founder dies, there is some shake-up, some difference of opinion among the remaining members. And our life is not always as clean and as perfect as we would like it to be. So there were some unfortunate dissensions. But other than that, up until very recently, there was nothing significant from the official church. But a couple of years ago, the bishop in Worcester, who is Bishop Timothy Harrington, made with his vicar general a trip to Rome to meet with the Holy Father concerning the Order of St. Benedict's Center, the Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and the issue of the doctrine. And a letter was issued, this was, you could call it another protocol letter of sorts. It was a letter issued by the Diocese of Worcester to the Diocese of Boston, talking about a letter that had been sent out by the Diocese.
Hold it there 1 minute, Doug. I believe I have another call coming in. Sorry. Okay. Continue, please.
All set?
Yes.
Okay. This letter was written under the authority of Bishop Harrington of Worcester, and it was written to the Cardinal in Boston, at that time Cardinal Law's office, and it was giving the official position of the Church concerning St. Benedict's Center and the doctrine at the time. And in this letter, it was stated that the St. Benedict's Center sisters at St. Anne's House were asked to make a profession of faith. And they were asked to understand the teaching of the Church on this matter. Now, what their understanding of the Church on this matter is this. Father Deary concluded saying this, quote, "It would seem that the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith," that's the Holy Office where they had just recently visited, "the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith holds this doctrine to have been defined and consequently definitive. It is its theological interpretation and speculation which they see as problematical. In our discussions with the congregation, it seemed rather clear that proponents of a strict interpretation of this doctrine should be given the same latitude for teaching and discussion as those who would hold more liberal views." Now, I'm not in favor of giving the same latitude to those who hold more liberal views on the doctrine. However, it is clear now that even the members of the hierarchy who are now occupying the positions previously occupied by those who were responsible for suppressing the work of the center admit that orthodoxy can be taught clearly and should should not be penalized or persecuted by the official church members. It's a far weaker thing than we would like to see. We would like to see the Catholic bishops and priests and the Holy Father promoting this doctrine loudly and clearly all the time.
But at least what you're saying is it's not officially disapproved of.
No, they are admitting two things. Number one, that the doctrine has been defined by the church and therefore should be clear to everyone. And number two, that no one should be penalized for holding or teaching a strict interpretation of that doctrine.
Okay, let me go again. Let me simply summarize, if I may, what the doctrine we're talking about is in one sentence. Tell me if you agree, if it's correct. There's only Catholics in heaven. Would that be a good way to put it?
That's correct.
Okay. And Father Feeney never taught that unless someone's name was on official parish roster somewhere, he could not be saved, did he?
No. Being Catholic means, number one, that you are baptized. Number two, it means that you give assent with your mind to all the teachings of the Catholic faith, which are essential teachings on matters of faith and morals. It does not even mean necessarily that you have to be able to articulate all of those teachings, but that in your mind you do not reject any of them. And the most basic issues are, of course, when a priest or any Catholic comes upon a person who is dying, let's say, and they are interested in baptizing them and bringing them into the Catholic faith before they die, there are three things that they have to express, they give their assent to, before you can baptize them. The first is they have to believe that there is a God and that he punishes evil and rewards the good. The second thing is you have to agree that Jesus Christ is truly God, truly man. Thirdly, you have to agree that the authority he established on this church to teach is the Catholic Church and under the authority of the Roman Pontiff. And if they agree to those three things, then they can be baptized. So those are the minimum things which have to be given assent to in order to be considered Catholic in the extremity of an emergency situation.
Right. Doug, we're about near the end of the tape, so let me make a couple of things clear. Let me put them in my words. You confirm that my impression is correct.
All right.
That what Father Feeney taught was not an invention of his part, a discovery on his part, or anything else. It is simply Catholic doctrine.
Right.
And that if one were to read, say, Father Feeney's writings and not think that he was particularly good or particularly skilled or learned, one could ignore all of Father Feeney's writings and still find his doctrine in 100 other places, written in council decisions, papal statements, and doctors and fathers of the church, correct?
That's right.
So if Father Feeney had never lived, this doctrine would still be just as much part of Catholicism, with just as much evidence for it, as Father Feeney found, taught, and bore witness to, correct?
That's correct.
So it is merely an historical accident, or shall we, well, there are no accidents with God, of course, but from our point of view, that this doctrine has become somehow mixed up with Father Feeney's name, as if he invented it, discovered it, or preached it all by himself.
That's right.
All right, so again, we're simply saying that Father Feeney, by bearing witness to the faith, by emphasizing what he felt should have been emphasized, simply was a loyal Catholic who suffered for his faith. Would that be a good summary statement?
Very simple. He never taught anything different from any of the fathers or popes or doctors of the church.
Again, he simply, yes. Now, before we've discussed this matter, and I asked you to give a summary statement in one sentence of Father Feeney, and I thought it was a very good one, I'll ask you to do it again now, please.
Yeah. I said, very simply, that Father Feeney was the Athanasius of the 20th century.
And Athanasius, again, was a man who, according to legend and fact, essentially stood against the world, certainly against the hierarchical structure of the church that he tried so faithfully to serve at his time.
Yeah.
Once again, Doug, if you would give the address and telephone number of the real St. Benedict Center, please.
It's Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, St. Benedict Center, 95 Martin Road, P.O. Box 627, Richmond, New Hampshire, 03470. And the phone number there is 603-239-6485. And you could ask to speak to Brother Francis.
Once again, I would simply like to say that one of the reasons I've produced this tape is to try to get some facts across to the people who are listening to it. I'd simply say the following. Father Feeney was essentially a dry martyr for the faith, and those who think he was otherwise have the obligation to try to prove it. If they try to prove it by looking at the documentation which is available, they will find out, in fact, what Doug said today and what I assent to as being true is, in fact, the true situation with Father Feeney. He was not a heretic. He was a hero. He was not a bad person. He was a martyr for the faith simply because he refused to budge for it, because he loved God enough to be willing to endure pain, suffering, and disapproval of man. And that's all I can say. If a Feeneyite means a person who is interested in clearing his name after his death, I am pleased to be considered a Feeneyite, at least by some. And I certainly hope that God will consider me one at my last judgment, because it will certainly count in my favor. I would like to thank you again, Doug, and I think that really wraps it up. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the effort. And I hope that this helps in the crusade to get, number one, the truth of the Church across to those who might be a little confused, and to clear, once again, we hope, ultimately, to exonerate completely the name, the reputation, the teachings, and the status of Father Leonard Feeney.
Well, I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, then, and I pray that God will bless you and Our Lady protect you in your apostolate at All Roads Ministry.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Good night now. Additional copies of this tape may be obtained by contacting us at ARM 55 Palen, P-A-L-E-N, Road, number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. Thank you for listening. God bless.